dwelling in the darkest depths of the mind, it's time for Mark D. Valenti and Brain Burrow.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Brain Burrow. This is your host, Mark D. Valenti. This is another one of our special Digging Deep sessions, and we'll have an opportunity to talk to a special guest, Genevieve Rossi. So, Genevieve, I'm going to start off by asking you the big question. Who exactly is Genevieve Rossi?
Well, it's a good question. Well, you know, I like to think that I'm someone that's always evolving. So who I am this moment might be different than who I am in an hour or a day, a week or a month. So at this moment, you know, I'm somebody struggling with a pandemic, struggling with, you know, trying to balance, you know, work and life and figure out when work is going to pick up again and things like that. I come from an Italian-American background. I like living in cities. But who am I really? Hard to say, you know. I guess you're always kind of discovering yourself, you know. That's something to think about, though. Who am I? Because, you know, you want to identify yourself by your work or your nationality, but that's not necessarily who you are, really. You know, like, what's really you? Is it your soul? Is it your heart? You know, it's, you know, we usually identify ourselves by our job, I guess, especially Americans. And then a lot of people I know in Europe seem to identify themselves by their ethnicity or our nation of origin. You know, I don't know. It's hard to say, you know, but I guess I'm all those things and more.
So. Yeah. Thank you for talking through that. And that's the reason why we asked that question in the beginning anyway, because it's really about understanding you from the beginning. So how do you feel about your answer then that you just gave me? Because you put a lot of thought into it, which is great. So how do you feel about your final answer?
I don't think it probably was a great one. I probably, if I gave it more thought, maybe I could come up with something a little bit deeper and more philosophical. But it's the one I'm going to go with for now.
That's perfectly fine. And there's no wrong answers on here. It's all about the guests and trying to understand more about them. Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you're always evolving. So tell me a bit about that. What does that mean and why is that important to you?
Well, I would imagine as an actor, as a human being, we should always be kind of evolving, like always picking up new influences, always learning and kind of expanding ourselves. And a lot of, you know, in a lot of different ways, like as an actor, you know, taking on new roles, developing your skills, expanding yourself, stepping out of your comfort zone. But those are probably all things that we want to do in our daily life as well. You want to always feel like you're evolving as a human being.
Yeah, that's very well said, right? I like the way you framed that. It's how what we always want to do, what you should be doing. But why did you choose that language? Why did you choose about sort of like there's an expectation versus for you specific? Because you don't strike me as the type of person who's going to do something just because society tells you to do it. So, So talk about why, one you, for you specifically, why is it important to evolve?
Well, you don't want to stay in the same place. I guess you should always be kind of reinventing yourself, rediscovering yourself. Maybe, you know, you don't want to get stagnant, you know. Interesting. I'm trying to think like, you don't want to get a new haircut, change your look, get a new outfit. You know, don't get so comfortable always being the same exact way and always visualizing yourself as the same exact person. You know, you don't want to have that level of, you know, so much attachment, I guess, to that. Yeah. You should be evolving. You should be changing. You should be open to that. You know, you don't want to look like you're like a time traveler from like the year you were born or whatever. You know, you show, and some people do look like that, but but you do want to look like you're progressing, you're changing, you're picking up new influences and things like that.
Sure. Yeah, that's, again, thanks for taking some time to think about that answer. And stagnation can definitely be detrimental in a lot of ways. You strike me again as somebody who's confident in themselves. Talk about a time whenever you have self-doubt, because self-doubt plagues everybody on some level. Talk about whenever you experience self-doubt.
Well, I think everybody does. You know, and as an actor, you can definitely experience self-doubt because here you are and you're seeing yourself on the big screen. And maybe all your flaws are amplified, you know, like all your pores in your face are all like up there on the movie screen and you can see it all. It's like one little hair is out of place. You have maybe a little bit of a zit on your nose, you know, whatever. It's all there. And that's why a lot of actors like Jared Leto and Johnny Depp or whatever don't even like to watch their own movies, because it's probably, even though they're very good looking guys, they hate to maybe see themselves that critically. You know, it's hard to sometimes look at yourself as an actor and not be critical. Like maybe you look a little bloated that day. And you always want to look your best. Like I was just saying to a friend of mine recently, I was about to do a photo shoot. And I told him, I have to go to bed nice and early. Got to wake up and have a good breakfast, because when you're going to be in a film or do a photo shoot, those pictures can be around, you know, for many years, and people are going to judge what you look like by them. So you want to make sure you got enough sleep and you don't look tired or whatever in those pictures, because who knows, maybe somebody's going to think you were on drugs that day, or you were sick, you were this or you were that, or you're just not going to look your best. So there's a little bit of like that pressure, I guess, to try to look your best as an actor or as a model. Unless you get lucky and end up as a zombie in a movie or something like that, then the worse you look, the better you look. So that works out.
That's nice. Right. We can only hope for that opportunity.
Exactly.
Yes. And did I read somewhere, you know, and again, we don't talk that often about our work on here, but I think it's worth noting that don't you play a zombie in a movie that's coming out or out already specifically?
It's going to be coming out in May. Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead. So, and I played a zombie in a couple movies, but that was probably the movie with the biggest budget. I think it was like a $70 or $90 million movie. I played two different zombies. I'm a nun zombie, and then I'm an alpha zombie later on. And that's a good example, because you show up on set, cold time was like 1 o'clock in the morning. It took until about 9 a.m. to get everybody done with their hair, their makeup, and their wardrobe to be zombies. And then we were shooting, and they were like, you know, 16, 20 hour days. And God knows we were tired and we looked like poop, but that just kind of added to it. Like the worse you look, the better you look as a zombie. Like if you're tired or whatever,
right,
it doesn't even matter. If your eyes are a little red, all the better, you know? It doesn't matter at that point. You know, the worse you look, the better you look in that type of movie. And that's nice to a certain degree, because then you don't have that pressure to look perfect.
Sure.
In a zombie movie, you know? Which you normally have in other movies, like your pressure is to look terrible.
That's right. It's almost a relief at that point to know that you're going to look as terrible as you can. So, okay. So you're able to push through that self-doubt. You sort of accepted that you're going to be on the screen and you're going to see all these flaws. What has been your biggest struggle in being an actor?
As an actor, I would say people are very critical of how much actors weigh, about how actors age. You know, you're never thin enough, you're never young enough. People are very critical of other people when it comes to these things. And then, you know, you look at a lot of great actors, they're not necessarily young, they're not necessarily thin, really. You know, actors and actresses kind of run the gamut, obviously. So that's not a fair thing to say. But, you know, no matter what level of actor you're at, male or female, people do feel, sometimes get that negativity and stuff. And that can affect you and affect your confidence and your performance as an actor. You know, and I guess you need to have a certain degree of self-acceptance that, you know, you're not perfect and you're not going to be perfect. And we are really living in a society, you know, you go on Instagram and stuff and, you know, people are striving for perfection, you know, with the filters that they're using and everything else, all the makeup that people wear, you know, plastic surgery becoming more and more commonplace. So it's probably more difficult now than ever before for actors, actresses, and people in general, not to feel critical of themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're bringing up a great point about society pressures that they put on for this perfection and beautification and everything else. That's a great point. Again, you mentioned about confidence as being part of it and people's confidence goes down. What do you do to boost your own confidence? Because whenever, again, being a human being who's imperfect, I'm sure there's times when your confidence is low. How do you help elevate that confidence again?
Well, I think what you have to remember is that none of us is perfect. And, you know, perfection is not something that anyone really can accomplish. And, you know, and maybe it isn't even a worthwhile pursuit, honestly, because it's kind of shallow. You know, we should be thinking a little bit more about our where we're at spiritually, emotionally, and all those kinds of things. And then really, should we be going through the world judging everybody by their appearances and how perfect they look? You know, a lot of actors and actresses that are very successful, you know, are not the most perfect looking people, you know, as Whoopi Goldberg, Helen Mirren, Danny DeVito, you know, whoever, Kathy Bates, you know, like a lot of times for acting, it's important to be relatable, you know, someone that people see part of themselves in. And not all actors really achieve that, some more than others. You know, like Angelina Jolie is an incredibly beautiful woman. She's not super relatable. You know, Brad Pitt's a very good looking person. You know, more relatable people might be like, Sandra Bullock might be a little bit more relatable, a little bit more girl next door, you know, maybe. You think what man would be more relatable, you know? You know, it's tough. Well, Danny DeVito is definitely relatable. Kathy Bates is definitely relatable too.
That's right.
Or Roseanne Barr is a very relatable person. She seems like she'd be like your neighbor or something like that. You know, and there's space in the world as an actor for different people to occupy different roles and things like that. People shouldn't feel like they have to be perfect, because that mind leads you down the road of having a warped self-image, or maybe anorexia or whatever. But you know, sometimes it's hard nowadays, especially in the digital age, as a public person, to keep your self-esteem up, because you can go online and people will sometimes comment on your pictures like, you're fat, you're ugly, you're this, you're that. And it happens, you know, this whole social media age, you know, you post a picture on Instagram and you may get some positive or negative feedback. And people are more brazen on social media with their comments than they would probably be in real life.
That's right.
And the saying that my mom always had of, you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all, doesn't seem to be something that a lot of people practice.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. That's a great point. And there's a lot of studies that show that, and I'm actually somebody who has investigated and researched confidence a lot, is that people that struggle with self-confidence, as you know, it's easier for them to lash out at other people, right? It's because they don't feel it within themselves. They want to try to break other people down. And to your point about social media, there's this barrier where people are just typing on the screen. So that low self-confidence comes out. And unfortunately, the victim in the cases are people that put themselves out there like that. And
there's a lot of bullying nowadays too,
right,
where people really harp on that. You know, confident people raise other people up, you know. People that are not confident put other people down to try to make themselves feel better. So when you bully or put other people down, you're revealing more about yourself than you are about the other person, probably. And anybody can be someone that has low self-confidence. I know some of the most attractive people that have very low self-confidence, that they barely post pictures of themselves online, and they would be considered extremely attractive in a conventional sense. But when they see themselves, all they see is flaws. Like, they're like, my nose could be better, you know, this could be better, don't like my hair, I'm so fat, whatever. But if you saw them, you'd be like, this is such a gorgeous man or woman.
Yeah, you're right. And it goes back to confidence. I've talked in the show before about three levels of motivation, and just briefly I'm going to mention it. First level of motivation is kind of our biological needs, right? We're after food, water, shelter, just to get safe, right? But once those needs are met, you evolve to a second level, which is you're looking at other people, that socialization. You want to get people's approval, to your point. Truly, if somebody's confident, they've achieved that second level of motivation, and they evolve to a third level where they are able to put themselves out there. They're very intrinsically motivated. They know what they believe. They know who they are. And they don't need, or even are impacted by, other people whenever they comment negative on themselves. And it's a misnomer, I think, when people see somebody who's out there at a party and they're just, you know, just very big and full of life. And there's a misperception that they're too confident or they're arrogant. But in reality, we find that those people have a low level of confidence because they're constantly looking for other people's approval. So what are your thoughts about that?
Oh, that's true. It's hard to gauge who's the most confident person. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, a confident person doesn't have an ego, you know, like it is somebody that doesn't feel like they need to have external approval, and they have to really, you know, prove anything to anyone. I'm going to say one actor I thought was like that, that I met at the New York City Film Festival, was Willem Dafoe. You know, Willem Dafoe was doing a Q&A for a movie, and they would ask him questions, and he was like, you know what? He's like, I don't really know the answer to that. He's like, I'm going to have to defer to the director. And he seemed like he was trying really hard to take the attention off of himself and put it more on the director and the other actors, which shows him as probably a very confident person to be as modest as he actually is.
That's a great point, right? Modesty.
He has nothing to prove. That's, you know, right. He has nothing to prove.
That's right. Modesty and humility are the hallmark of a confident person, because they're learning from others. They're constantly knowing that they have things to improve about themselves, but they don't need to prove it to others.
And, course, and they recognize the importance of a team, and that a film is a team effort. It's not like the whole movie is about Willem Dafoe or me or anybody else. When we do a film, it is totally a teamwork. And I'm going to segue into a movie that I directed recently that's going to be coming out next year. I wrote and directed a film based on a short story that I did, a short film I did called Attack of the Killer Chickens. It was a short film, and now it's going to be feature Attack of the Killer Chickens, the movie. And that's an example of, you know, teamwork, because, you know, I'm the writer, I'm the director, I'm like one of the producers, and I act in it, but where would I be without everybody else?
That's right.
You know, my executive producer, Dave Stein, you know, all of my actors who are crucial, my cinematographer, my editor, my special effects people, my everyone, you know, it wouldn't be a movie without them.
Yeah, it's a great point. And congratulations, by the way, for moving forward
with
that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's a great point, right? So being a director, and I'm going to get your thoughts on what that experience was like, because you're right. It's about teamwork. It's about connectedness. But because you're dealing with people and there's challenges, you know, there's things you have to work through as well. And I'm not saying, you know, which person was bad on the set, but I want to ask you, as a director, pulling everybody together, what was your biggest challenge with that?
Well, I think what you always have to remember in filmmaking, and all filmmaking, but maybe especially indie filmmaking, is that everything's going to go wrong the day of the shoot. Everything goes wrong.
Very true. You know, yes.
You plan everything, and it's really good to plan everything, but at the same time, actors, directors, everybody has to be flexible, that if we lose our location, or if this happens, like somebody calls out sick or whatever, we have to completely rework it. Oh, it ended up raining. Now we have to shoot everything inside. Yeah. Everything always goes wrong. And you have to just kind of go into that with the attitude that, you know, I prepared, I'm ready, but everything's going to probably go wrong. And then you have to just go into that. And even on the set of Army of the Dead, they had, you know, 70 or 90 or whatever million-dollar movie. They had some setbacks and some things that went wrong. Like one day, I think catering didn't order enough food. You know, and then they had to order more food. You know, you just never know what's going to go wrong, you know, somewhere along the line. And that happens on everything. And you have to just kind of be prepared for that. And that's a challenge, because not everybody does well psychologically with having everything planned out and then everything changing last minute. People get very attached to their plans and their preparedness. Yeah. And, you know, and that's the thing with being an actor or a director, is that you have to both be prepared, but also be flexible.
Yeah, no, it's a fantastic point. And had I not experienced that multiple times myself, I couldn't make that, you know, connection. And I think, though, it's a great point for life in general. You know, how do you, so how do you personally balance planning, but also being flexible? In other words, without falling into a trap where you're looking at everything like, oh my gosh, it's not going to work out anyway. I'm not saying you're going to say that. So how do you balance being perfectly planned and getting upset when it doesn't work versus expecting the worst of all possible things happening? How do you find that middle?
Well, I guess, what do they say? Always hope for the best, but be prepared for the worst.
That's correct, yes.
You know, and I don't think that's a bad saying, because, you know, pessimism gets like a bad rap. And optimism always gets a really good rap. But sometimes optimism can work against you too, especially when it comes to health and medical stuff.
Yeah.
You don't want to be too optimistic about your medical condition, because you might not go to the doctor.
Yeah.
And you might not take care of yourself. And I know cases of people I've known that passed away because they were too optimistic about their medical condition. You know?
Yeah.
And they didn't think they need to seek out help. But we're so programmed in our society that optimism is the ideal. And then the pessimistic person might be like, you know, gets everything checked out. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, it, you know, you have to kind of balance that, you know, you want to, you do want to have that preparedness. And I think we kind of all learned that this past year with the pandemic is that, like, you don't, you know, you don't want to be over optimistic in a pandemic either. You know, I'm not going to get this, you know, I'm going to be fine.
Yeah.
I don't have to be careful.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. You know, the pessimist might've done better. The pessimist is like, you know what? I'm going to bring my Purell. I'll bring two masks. That's right. I'm going to wash my hands.
That's right. Over preparing, right? Didn't hurt anybody. I think that's a great point. And, you know, I mentioned self-doubt, and there's a lot of, again, studies that show that self-doubt is actually a normal response to things. It's actually how our human ancestors survived thousands of years ago. If somebody was doubting, like, okay, is there a tiger sitting over there in those weeds? Is there like somebody waiting to jump out from a different tribe? Just a little bit of self-doubt is okay, because the people that don't do that end up taking the huge risks, to your point. And there's the research also shows that athletes and students who actually have a little bit of self-doubt actually outperform counterparts who don't have no self-doubt. But to your point, it becomes a problem if you obsess over it. If you're constantly avoiding things because you're like, oh my God, I don't want to go to the house because, you know, the COVID's going to get me and all this other stuff, right? So it's a balance. So how do you, because I agree with what you're saying, being a realist, how do you stop yourself from going down that pathway of not doing anything or taking any risks? Like, how do you make manageable risks, you personally?
That's a good question. Like, well, nowadays, you know, with the pandemic, you know, I feel like you still have to kind of go on and live your life, but you just have to, you know, reduce your risks as much as you can. Like, I wouldn't reduce my risks to the extent of some people I know where they're just staying home for the last year. You know, I go to the supermarket, I've gone to toy shows. I was in Smithville on Saturday at an outdoor event. I've gone to the movie theater at least 7 times during the pandemic to see movies. You know, I wear a mask, I wash my hands, I take a lot of vitamins and minerals and herbs that are supposed to be there to boost my immune system. I've been eating a lot of foods to boost my immune system. I'm exercising 4 times a week. And then I, you know, I wear a mask and I carry some hand sanitizer with me. And I feel like I'm covering the bases, but at the same time, you can't just not live either.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I'm guessing that you were exercising and doing all that before the pandemic.
Yeah, pretty much. I started taking a little bit more stuff recently. Like, I was already taking vitamin D. I was already taking zinc and vitamin C to the recommended dosages for COVID-19, before COVID-19, before I even heard of COVID-19, because that's just the sort of person I am.
Sure.
And I'm a certified personal trainer through the National Academy of Sports Medicine. So I'm always weight training. I'm really into exercising anyway. But I did start upping my self in the sense that I started taking ginseng, which is really good for energizing you and boosting the immune system. And I just started taking vitamin K2, which is supposed to be really good for your immune system as well. And I think in some clinical trials did very well against COVID-19. So I just started taking that recently. Yeah, vitamin K2 is a little known vitamin that very few people actually take. I just bought it on Amazon after watching a movie about it on YouTube. So I started incorporating new things, and I always shop at Trader Joe's, and I buy myself a lot of really healthy stuff. And I tend to be like a little bit of a health nut, you know, even though there's not a pandemic. So that I've just maybe upgraded that a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that's a great example. You were already doing these things. You know, you just, to your point, augmented it a bit with the pandemic. And exactly. I think it's a great point too, right? It's how do you balance taking certain risks, but manageable risks, not going overboard, but also not, you know, not allowing yourself to do the things that you normally do. So it sounds like you have a great balance. Let me ask you this. I have another question I like to ask on this show is, what is your trigger? It's sort of like, what makes you squirm, right? But it's not even just like what, you know, what grosses you out. It's more as you're living your life, because again, you seem very calm, you seem very centered. There's got to be something that triggers you, something you encounter, something, some people's actions. Like, what's something that triggers your, where you get frustrated or angry or irritated?
I think last time I got irritated. I guess if anybody jeopardizes my health or safety, doing something that I feel like is, you know, incompetent or ill-advised, you know, like if somebody's spraying like deadly chemicals near me, Yeah. You know, that's your choice if they want to spread deadly chemicals, but you know, you have to be conscious of who you're doing that around and their health and things like that. And people aren't always that conscious of the health of people around them. Like one thing in case in point is cigarette smoke. Like I don't let people smoke cigarettes around me.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we all have triggers. We all have things that make us squirm in that way. And if it makes sense, if you see a cloud of chemicals that somebody's spraying the yard or something around you, it makes sense why that could be a possible trigger.
Oh yeah. Or just smoking a cigarette around me. Or I was driving somebody home from an acting thing once, which was very nice of me to drive her home.
Sure.
And she was about to light a cigarette in my car.
So what did you do?
You cannot light a cigarette in somebody's car without asking them. You can never get that smell out of the upholstery.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
So you were able to assert yourself, which is fantastic, and tell her not to do it.
Exactly.
So the other question that I have for you is, what gets you out of bed in the morning? And I don't mean like, because people say, oh, my dog gets me out of bed or whatever, my alarm clock, but what is your drive each day to keep moving forward? What's your motivation?
That's a good question. And, you know, and I can be someone that likes to sleep in, you know, if I don't have anything scheduled for the day, you know, I could be like getting up at like 10 or noon or whatever, if I don't have anything going on that day. You know, sometimes I like to sleep late and kind of, you know, I enjoy sleeping and being in my bed and whatever.
Sure.
So I guess what motivates me is like being on a schedule and having things that I'm excited and I want to do with the day.
Okay. That's great. Yeah. So again, it goes back to planning in a certain way, and that's sort of driving you to do that. Mm-hmm. So what's on your schedule? I mean, so you're an actor, you've been doing this for a while. Why acting? Why did you choose to do that? What motivates you to do that specifically?
Well, I would think sometimes in life, and you might understand this too, is that something chooses you. Like sometimes when you try to avoid something, that something finds you, you know? So I think I'd always had an interest in acting and I was avoiding doing it. And then I kept on being presented with these opportunities to act. And then I took them and then everything kind of blossomed from there. And then here I am in like over 108 movies and like a few short years and whatever, after like being someone that was like, no, I should not act and I should have a serious life doing serious things.
imagine that. I bet you can't even think about a different life like that where you're doing serious things, as you say, quote unquote.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess I could always be serious about acting. Not too many of my films are really that serious stuff. A lot of them are like horror comedies and they're kind of zany and they're a little over the top and wacky. So
yeah, but you like doing it.
Yeah, because you know what? You shouldn't probably take yourself too seriously in life, you know, either. Maybe people need to focus more on, you know, being happy with their lives than focusing on being successful. Like I think the Dalai Lama has a great quote. He said, you know, the world doesn't need more successful people. The world has enough successful people. There are a lot of successful people in the world. And that's what we all want to be, is successful. But maybe what the world really needs is more happy people, more storytellers, more creative people, more humanitarians.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a great point. Success can be boring sometimes too, if we're all doing the same thing, as opposed to contributing to our overall society in the ways that you mentioned, for instance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. All right, last question. What do you want people to walk away with after this conversation? In other words, what do you want them to think about Genevieve Rossi?
You should think, I want to put her in my movie.
Good answer. I like that. Tangible stuff. Okay. I like it.
And I want to look up her IMDb and see all the movies she's been in. And I also want to buy her movies and look them up on Amazon Prime and watch them.
And if people are falling asleep while they're listening to this because it's late at night, then that may be inundated into their brain. The next morning, they'll be able to do it and not even know why. So that's
exactly
great.
Right. Yeah. And then you can also look at my website, genevieverossi.com.
Fair. Yes. Sounds like if people are interested, and I will actually put this in when I post this on the podcast and also on YouTube, I'll put that in the link as well, if that's okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. My website, you know, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram and all that kind of stuff. So yeah.
Oh, you're
and
out there.
IMDb is a great place to book too.
I want to thank you, Genevieve, for the insightful conversation today. I appreciated you coming on.
Thank you very much. This is an interesting and a different sort of interview for me.
Oh, good. That's what we're shooting for here on Brainborough. So thank you. Okay. I want to thank everybody for listening in or watching today. And this is Mark DiValenti and Genevieve Rossi for Brainborough. Have a great day.
Thank you.
You just dug deep with Mark D. Do you want more? Follow Mark on Instagram at ValentiHorror and subscribe to the Brainborough podcast.